Right, so let's celebrate being here.
Yeah.
With our feet on the ground. Let's take three deep and mindful breaths. And with a deep in-breath, Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Here we are, all present and accounted for. Shiny faces, all in our places. The yoga of action, how should we behave? What should we do? From where should our actions originate? How do we know if what we're doing is in alignment with who we really are and what we're resolved to be? That's the yoga of action. And when we feel comfortable with our response to those questions, to that extent we are lighter. And when you're lighter, you are enlightened. You don't need to go off to a cave somewhere and not talk to anyone to be lighter or enlightened. Enlightenment is an experience we can have doing what we've always done, nothing different. Rather, experiencing what we've always done from a different light within us. Action. Our teaching comes from the Bhagavad Gita, which is the song of the Lord. Song of the Lord. It's really interesting. Really interesting that the Bhagavad Gita is set in a battlefield, an ancient battlefield, not like today's battles. Battles fought differently 3,000 years ago. 3,000 years ago, battles were fought hand to hand. There weren't artillery shells and bombs. They were fought hand to hand. And the metaphor for the Bhagavad Gita is the great warrior, Prince Arjuna, whose job, who was born to be a warrior, said to the divine, who happened to be present with him, his charioteer, I can't fight. I'm all confused. I can't fight. I won't fight. What shall I do? I surrender to your teaching. And the Lord, in the representation of Krishna, many different representations of the divine or God, this happened to be Krishna, his charioteer, taught him how to look at life through an enlightened, a lighter point of view, doing what was his to do. Arjuna was what's called a kshatriya, that is part of the warrior class, responsible for taking care of the people in their country, their nation, through fighting, and violence. We look at violence through different eyes these days. The basic message of Krishna was to empower Arjuna so that he could do what spirit called upon him to do, which was to fight and kill each other in war. Mahatma Gandhi, who was a great follower of the Bhagavad Gita, sublimated this setting because he was a pacifist. He was a man of nonviolence. So he looked at this ancient setting through a different set of eyes, and he found support for his enlightenment from the Bhagavad Gita through nonviolence, didn't he? How interesting. How interesting. When we send the U.S. Marine Force upon the shores of Iwo Jima, what do we expect those men to do? What do they expect of themselves? What do they support each other and respect each other to do? Fight. Similarly, their adversary had a similar mindset, we see, and they fought with the same vigor. There's a very interesting story. We just celebrated Armistice Day. At the end of World War I, the Great War, and the war to end all wars. A great story. I think it was 5 o'clock in the morning on November 7th, 1918, that the warring parties decided to call an armistice. But they didn't call the armistice at the moment they made the decision. Everyone needed to be told, and it needed to be done in an orderly, properly manner. So they decided the armistice would begin at 11 a.m. that day, Armistice Day. Would begin at 11 a.m. As the word went out to the Allied commanders, I'm not sure what was going on the German side, I just have the story from the Allied side. Some of the Allied commanders were upset in a way. They hadn't fulfilled their mission. So they called on their soldiers to form another attack. There was a Belgian town, Mons. They wanted the soldiers to capture that town before the armistice. Even though after the armistice, the Germans were going to leave that town, go back home. And there's one particular story that struck me. About 5 minutes to 11, there was one soldier, an American soldier, from the Midwest, I believe, who hadn't seen action. And he didn't want to go home without seeing action. He fixed his bayonet and began running towards the German lines, 5 minutes to 11. Mind you, at 11 o'clock, all the bugles sounded the call to retreat, and all the firing stopped, and everyone rose in the trenches, in some cases embraced each other, and the war was over. But at 5 minutes to 11, this man hadn't had the experience he wanted in war. He fixed his bayonet and began running towards the German lines. And he was running towards a German machine gun nest. And the Germans in their broken English said, "Stop, stop, go back. An armistice is coming in just a few minutes." And what do you think the man did? He kept going. What do you think the German machine gunners did? They killed him. Each human being doing what was theirs to do. And what do we bring to these stories? Our judgments as to what was right, what was wrong, how it should have happened, how it could have happened. And yet here were men doing what was theirs to to do, which is just what Russ talked about in the sermon today. How can we find what is ours to do? Perhaps in these times it's not to participate in violent confrontations. What is ours to do? Not only what is ours to do, can we really respect what others find it's theirs to do? It doesn't mean that we approve of it, or that we condone it, or we support it. Just that we respect that people are acting. Not in a reactive manner, but with some resolution, as this is what's mine to do. This is, I'm honor bound to do this. We know people act sometimes from their reactive selves and sometimes from resolution. And we are called to act upon from our inner selves what we are resolved to do. We're going to talk about some of these things today. For
sometimes it's very hard to, we might have, you know, the internal idea wanting to bring that out to light, but it's not easy to do, especially since we've been programmed, if you will, or raised a certain way. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Not easy. One day at a time.
If it weren't easy, it wouldn't be any better. We could just sleep in the life. Here's a thought for the day that came up today, and I thought it was apropos to what we're studying. Attachment is the great fabricator of illusions. Reality can be attained only by someone who is detached. This is Simone Weil, the great philosopher and writer. Attachment is the great fabricator of illusions. Reality can be attained only by someone who is detached. Mr. Eknath Esfaran has a commentary. We can read it. One of the profoundest laws of spiritual psychology is you see what you are and you are what you see. The observer cannot help conditioning what he or she observes. Those who cannot love see a world where love has little place. Talked about love last week. Those who live to enlarge their love, by contrast, see a world of hope, a world of men and women who, despite their failings, are capable of love in the core of goodness in their hearts. To see life from this lofty vantage, we need detachment. Not from others, but from ourselves. Or perhaps it could be said detachment from our minds. Do we remember from last week the three categories of love? I thought we might review that. Again, three categories. Three ways love shows up. The first way love can show up is who we are. Those who live to enlarge their love, seeing a world of hope. A world of men and women who, despite their failings, are capable of love and the core of goodness in their hearts. Love is who we are. Second way love shows up is as a feeling. I love channels. That's a feeling that just shows up in the moment, isn't it? I look over now at Chan, and now I love Chan. So one feeling is replaced by another feeling. We also know that we can harbor feelings or cultivate them, including love. Those who live to enlarge their love, that's cultivating love. Thinking in terms of love. It may spring from an experience of love here and love there, and then we can transform that into a pattern and a harboring and a commitment to love, which then will transform love into who we are. The third way love shows up is in what we do. That's what we'll talk about today. Love is what we do. So when we are doing love, how does that show up in our actions? We talked about three ways love shows up in our actions, and we can recognize it. Love shows up by us showing respect to our family, our friends, most importantly, to those with whom we disagree. Respect for those with whom we disagree, which finally comes back to respect for ourselves. Respect. Love shows up by acts of respect. Love shows up in acts of generosity of spirit. When someone does something we disagree with and we get upset with it, whether we know them or it's some remote person, can we, in our thoughts and minds, treat them in our actions with a spirit of generosity? A spirit of generosity. Generosity. And finally, can we act with compassion? So whatever we see is ours to do, whether it's the Kshatriya warrior going to war, or other acts that we do, can we do those acts with compassion for others? Can you even go to war respecting the man you are fighting, who is your adversary, retaining a spirit of generosity towards that man, which means after you have subdued him, maybe you don't also kill off his family and destroy his livestock. Spirit of generosity and with compassion, knowing that he or she is a human being like you are, doing what they were called to do. And having compassion, even though you have fought with this person. Those are the way love shows up in action. So love is who we are. Love is a feeling that we have. And all love shows up in action. Let's look at the yoga of action. There we go. The unenlightened, haven't lightened up yet, do things with attachment, wanting some results for themselves. Not that we don't plan on things, but in the moment, when God delivers, whatever, the universe shows up for us, the unenlightened are doing those things with attachment, and tend to get upset if things don't work out their way, wanting some results. And a lighter person, enlightened person, does things with the same zeal, Arjuna, but without attachment, doing what is ours to do without being fixated on things turning out our way, or being right, or having that person who's always wrong again show up as being wrong again. So without attachment, and thus, as we do things with zeal, but without attachment, guides others on the path of selfless action, which is karma yoga. When we act without attachment to results, we can act on a path of selfless action. That means when a situation comes up where there is something that we're doing that involves another person, how are we evaluating and looking at that action? Are we looking at that action involving someone else from the standpoint, well, of this is hard for me to do, this is difficult, I feel challenged by this. Well, actually it's easy. This is easy for me to do. Easy for me to do. Do you see how that's a path of selfish action? It's all about me. Whether it's hard or easy. Selfless action is when it's about the other person. As I do this, I wonder what's going on with them. I wonder what's going on with them. I'm now looking with respect at that person, at their own consciousness, at the God within. I am now choosing, as I do this action, to look at what they're doing with the spirit of generosity and some compassion for why and how they got to be exactly how they are right now. That's selfless action. See the difference? Our reactive minds generally are talking to us saying, well, this is all about me. This is so hard. Poor me. This is really easy. Then you wonder why you screwed it up, because you weren't paying attention, you thought it was easy. Not being present. Karma Yoga. Here's the commentary. Just as an ordinary person performs actions with selfishness, this is about me, Lord. This is hard, this is easy. I hope I get what I want when I do this. The more money, or more this or that. I hope I avoid dire consequences, Lord. An ordinary person performs with selfishness. The enlightened one also does things, but without selfishness. The only difference, the ordinary person does things for his or her own benefit. The enlightened one does things for others' benefit. Always thinking about others. When we wake up in the morning feeling in a state of love and feeling I'm so grateful. When you are grateful, how can you not be in a state of love? I'm so grateful. State of love. And when you're grateful, you lose your selfishness because you're not looking at yourself. You're so grateful in love. You're seeing others. What's good for them? What's not good for them? Oh, yes, your mind is still talking. I can attest that my mind often talks to me and complains about things a lot. Even so, can we, in our actions, open ourselves up? Respect, generosity, compassion, doing things for others' benefit. And actually, in the ultimate sense, deep, 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 in a way, it's not for others' benefit. It's for our benefit.
When we give.
See that?
Yeah.
When we act for others' benefit, who gets the most benefit? We do. We really do. You know that. When you've done something without thinking of yourself, whether it's hard or easy or whatever, it's just yours to do, you feel so wonderful. Now how that person who received the benefit of your action, how they feel or show up or do, that's their spiritual path. But you feel so, you gave them the money. Now they wasted it or they... But you did what was yours to do. So you are at peace with yourself. Well, maybe. Maybe you get ticked off later on because they wasted the money or whatever. But in that moment, you are enlightened.
I wonder if there in some cases there's like a both-and approach, right? We want to give freely to the daughter, son, church, but we also want them to how do I say this? That they would
say it simply.
That they take responsibility. And it's not my job to tell them how to spend the money, right, let's say. But it is, I guess I would, maybe I'm thinking from the I perspective, and maybe I need to let that go. Maybe that's part of my...
I got it. What's a true gift?
Without
is a gift like a tiger you give to someone with a chain attached to it?
No.
Or is a gift like a bird that you let loose and notice how it flies?
Which and so having gift? Trust of that bird is going to learn how to fly its own way at its own time, and how the bird clothes themselves, feeds themselves, shelter themselves.
Can you notice the expectations that you have?
Yeah.
Say, wow, these are wonderful expectations I have.
Sure.
I'm anticipating this is how it's going to work out, Lord. Thank you for the expectations as I let them go.
So the spiritual teaching here is, again, just letting go. No need to.
Let go and let God.
Well, I think we have an obligation for the discernment in the first place of knowing what is ours to do, because
yes,
we can always give that money to somebody else.
Yes.
And that's sort of, it's not even in your mind, it's a gut feeling that this is where my money should go, and then do
yes,
it, and then let it go. But you do have a bit of a responsibility for discernment, I think.
Absolutely. And discernment is another way of saying looking deep in yourself to seeing what's yours to do. Maybe that giving that money is not appropriate, so you don't do that action. It's not appropriate. You can clearly see it won't be a benefit to the person that receives it. Somehow it will offset the peace. So you choose not to give, sure. But once you see that this is mine to do, I can see clearly now, and let it go. And let it go. And right, be very discerning. Look deeply. If you're not sure, and you've been called on to give, and maybe some old feelings of guilt arise, oh, I ought to do this. They made me feel guilty because they said, look, this is your role to give and hand out the money. So maybe you have to take some time and be patient with yourself to say, okay, thank you, guilt. I see your claws and your green mask and your fangs and got a hold of me, but I'm just going to honor you and step back and see what is mine truly to do, make a deeper discernment underneath some guilt that I may have acquired. I don't mind having it, it's part of who I am. But I am resolute in that I won't act upon it, I'll look deeper. So that I'm sure what is mine to do is not from guilt, because I know when I do something from guilt, automatically I'm going to feel some resentment in the way things turn out if I act from guilt. And just, it's the way of the world. Acting from guilt, resentment's going to show up.
it goes works both ways. I mean, if you've been brought up to be extremely conservative with your money, you've got the guilt of spending. You're supposed to be saving it for your retirement.
When I was a younger man, I got sued. I did something wrong, and I got sued. And as a result of the suit, there was a settlement of $3,000, which I paid. And it was right that I paid it. I did something I shouldn't have done. But then I took a different attitude towards money. Here I'd given this $3,000 away from my savings to this person, that's fine. I thought, wow, I gave that person away $3,000. Why don't I treat myself to this $2,000 thing that I really want, and I've got the money for, and it would just make my life more beautiful. And I started having a different attitude towards money. The performance of actions for others is in no way inferior when you're acting for others. In fact, Lord Krishna says, the selfless person should even act a little more carefully and efficiently than a selfish person. When you're doing it for yourself, well, fine. When you're doing it for someone else, Scripture says you should act a little more carefully and more efficiently than a selfless person. It reminds me of a little story that I've probably told you before, tell it to you again. In the Middle Ages, when the craftsmen were building the magnificent cathedrals in Europe, these men were artists and craftsmen, and they dedicated their work to God, not to themselves. They didn't do it for themselves. It was dedicated to God. If you go up on the roofs of the cathedrals, back behind the spires, where no one can see anything from the ground, the gargoyles there are crafted with the same precision and beauty, maybe more so than the ones that are observable from the ground. The artisans crafted them a little more carefully and more efficiently than a selfish person might say, well, no one's going to see this. We'll just slapdash it together because it was dedicated to God. A yogi is another word for an enlightened person. Is acting for everyone's sake and should do a little better job. Sometimes the attitude is, well, since I'm not gaining much from this action, it's mainly for others, doesn't matter how I do it, I'll just let it happen. Better job. Probably Lord Krishna knows this attitude is part of human nature. So we do have some nature built into us, some reactive nature. So he says, don't think that because you're acting selflessly, you can get away with something haphazard. No. In fact, you should do a better job. So when you cook the dinner for yourself, you show some care because it's the way you like it. Prepare it a certain way and serve it a certain way. But when you're preparing the dinner for guests, you take even more care and make sure that it turns out as best as you can make it. And when you present it, you put your best china and silverware out and garnish the food so it not only smells great, but looks beautiful. You do a better job for us. We have a habit of doing that when we invite guests over. Can we expand that habit into other actions for others? Who is a yogi? The one who performs actions skillfully and efficiently. Why? Your interest is to serve others. Who is an enlightened person? A yogi, one who performs actions skillfully and efficiently to serve others. Satchidananda, who wrote this commentary, was a great exponent of being of service to others. He dedicated his life to being of service to others. He set aside his own family as a young man and went into ashram, studied under a swami there in an ashram, a renunciate, serving others. And he served his own family in a particular way as well, and they were very proud of him and grateful to him for what he did, even though he wasn't there with them as a father and husband anymore. So many people are going to be benefited by your action. You should do a better job. If an ordinary person doesn't do a good job, then only he loses. But if you don't do a good job, imagine how many people will lose. I have, it's about 5 minutes to. So, shall we close for the benefit of Jan Satan's? We're going to close. Yeah. We're all included. Oh, good. Yeah. Any questions or comments before we close? Next time we'll take up with another verse which enlarges on this. Let's take three deep and mindful breaths. Deep in breath. Go into